Hello everyone, welcome to G Live, a board game podcast hosted by Gaming Library. I am your host, Glory.
And my name is Leo.
So if it's your first time listening in, welcome to the show. G Live is composed of two shows, a variety show with our contributors hosted by Leo and I, and a roundtable discussion hosted by the GL curators about a variety of different board game related topics.
We do this every month, and there's two main releases coming out. This is the first, and there's another one coming up. So if you have, you know, have fun enjoying yourself listening to this and maybe even interacting with us online, then do check in for that one. And of course, do click follow.
So Leo, ano meron? Anong ganap?
Basically, besides the rains, hopefully everybody's staying dry. There's a big thing that happened in Gen Con. So basically Gen Con happened as well over the weekend.
Yes. August 1 to 4.
Yeah. One of my favoritest things in the world came out from Gen Con, and that is the new Keyforge set announcement. Worlds Collide has been announced, and you know what? I barely had enough time enjoying myself with Age of Ascension, the blue box. Tapos biglang mag-a-announce sila ng new set. It's the purple box this time.
That's true.
I am just hyped. I don't know. Have you been playing a lot of Keyforge?
Yeah, a bit. Ever since you taught me a month ago.
And then you've opened several packs as well. Right?
Yep.
All right. So with that being said, we want to ride this kind of excitement. We want to make sure that everyone stays up to date with their Keyforge goodness. And we want to give back to the community. With that being said, if you guys don't know, now you do. We are hosting the Double Horseman Cup at Gaming Library BGC, that's at 1 Bonifacio Mall. We have the main event happening on August 17th. And in this grand and premium tournament, we are going to be giving away to the champion a Double Horseman deck. All right, so the Double Horseman deck is essentially one of the rarest kinds of decks in Keyforge. Given that each deck is unique and one of a kind, there's this line of cards called the Horseman. Right, so it's a card it's a set of cards from House Sanctum,
mm-hmm,
that when one shows up, it's confirmed and it's assured that all three others show up. So they're basically the horsemen of the apocalypse, right?
Okay.
So for one set of horsemen to show up in one deck is quite the rarity. I think we did the numbers and it takes maybe anywhere between 24 to 30 decks opened from Call of the Archons for a horseman set to show up.
Mm-hmm.
So imagine two sets of said horsemen to show up in a single deck. So do the math. And I think the double horsemen show up in somewhere between 5 to 10% of all currently opened Keyforge decks in existence.
So aside from it being this rare, is it special? What's so special about it?
It's quite powerful.
Okay.
Given that the horsemen interact and synergize with each other, imagine two sets of said interactions and synergies happening in your deck. So you're almost always going to be calling House Sanctum in this deck. But then again, I think what we're fighting for here is the prestige,
okay,
right, of owning a Double Horseman deck. So once again, this is going to be happening on August 17th. We are going to be playing a survival format. So if you want more details on that and more information, do head on to our website, www.gaminglibe.com.
Another thing that happened this rainy weekend is the GL Great Big Sale. So it was from August 2 to 4. It was basically buy 2, 3, 4, 5 and get a particular percentage off. Sobrang ganda ng sale. There were a lot of really cool titles. There was a Keyforge bundle, Age of Ascension or Call of the Archons bundle, Codenames, Philippines Edition, Castles of Burgundy, Smash Up, and other new titles like Cat Lady and Herbaceous. So I got my Cat Lady and Herbaceous in this sale.
Herbaceous.
And some other big games like The Others, which is like 5,500. Yep. Charterstone, which is like 4,400. And if you get that in a bundle, you get five stuff, you get 25% off. So I hope you guys took advantage of that sale. If not, there might be something else cooking here, right?
Maybe, just maybe. Just maybe. But then again, you know, with big titles such as The Others and Charterstone, sobrang bawi na yon.
That's true.
As it is. I will sing Charterstone's Lods all night long because that's one of the few legacy games that I would heartily, fully suggest.
Yep.
And, you know, if you can get games just like that, and even maybe if you're just looking for that next big Keyforge deck that you're going to be playing, this right here is your chance. If we do once again go for the great big sale, just make sure you stay tuned, right?
Yep.
Social media, website, it's all there. That's where you're going to find out first if the great big sale is going to be making a comeback. Once again, it's gaminglive.com.
All right, so with that first segment done, let's now go to our contributors.
Hi all, Sam here, one of your friendly neighborhood GL curators. If you listened to GLive episode 2, you would have heard us talk about the 2019 Spiel nominations. The winners have recently been announced, and Wingspan is the 2019 Kenner Spiel de Yares winner. That is, it won Kunnisher Game of the Year. So what is Wingspan, and do I think it deserves to win the Kenner Spiel Award? Spoiler alert, I definitely think it does. Wingspan is a board game that plays from 1 to 5 players. It's designed by Elizabeth Hargrave, with art by Natalia Rojas, Ana Maria Martinez Jaramillo, and Beth Sobel. It is published by Stonemaier Games. Wingspan has a rather unusual theme for a board game. As the name may suggest, it is themed around birds. In this game, you're a bird enthusiast trying to attract birds to your wildlife preserve. It's a pretty mundane theme that most people would typically ignore. So to counter that, the publisher ensured that this game had awesome table presence. It's a lovingly produced game and its components are stellar. The game's production value definitely got people to sit up and pay attention. In this game, each player has their own wildlife preserve represented by a game board. The game board has three different sections, the forests, the grasslands, and the wetlands, which are all lovely and colorful. There are 170 unique bird cards, and the birds are drawn in a style that's reminiscent of a vintage book on bird watching. You also have plastic eggs in different pastel colors that look very, very pretty. There are big chunky wooden dice, cardboard tokens representing different types of food, a game trace insert to hold the cards, plastic resource containers to hold the tokens, and a cardboard dice tower shaped like a bird feeder. Even the boring old rulebook is lovely. I'm not sure how, but the linen finish of the rulebook is unlike anything I've seen or felt before. This game is just a really, really nice product. Component-wise, you're definitely getting a lot of bang for your buck. So, you know I love the components, but how does the game play? Well, it's an engine tableau building action selection game. So this isn't a game for anyone looking for something a bit more adventure-y or action-y. It's more for people into sedate games that require you to plan ahead with some minimal luck in the form of dice rolls and card draws. It's definitely a Euro game. So at the start of the game, each player picks a bonus card which will give them some guidance on what to focus on. You also randomly draw public goal tiles for each round, which changes up the scoring opportunities each game. The game is played over 4 rounds, and players start with 8 action tokens, but the players lose 1 action each round so that you'll have only 5 actions at the 4th round. The players take turns taking 1 action, which can be playing a bird card, gaining food, laying eggs, or drawing bird cards. You'll pay some combination of foods and eggs in order to play bird cards. These bird cards are played in the appropriate section of the player board, whether it's in the forest, the grassland, or the wetlands. These cards then give you additional benefits when you take the gain food, lay egg, or draw additional card actions. So it's important to decide on the proper order of taking the actions so that you can maximize the benefits given by the bird cards. You want them to trigger in the right order, getting you resources and scoring opportunities when you need them the most. There are some interesting decisions to be made, and triggering a good chain of actions is very satisfying, as you see your resources and eggs come pouring in. Wingspan is a medium-weight game that's easy to teach and quick to play. The rulebook is well laid out, and the actions that the players take each turn is clearly depicted on the player boards. Our first 5-player game lasted around an hour and a half, including the teaching time. The game moves at a fairly brisk pace, and any downtime is mostly spent figuring out your next move. I think that the quick playtime, simple gameplay, lovely components, and approachable theme make Wingspan a good intro to engine-building games. The only downside for me is that while the game has 170 different bird cards with different actions or effects, many of these effects are repeated across these cards. The same goes for the goal tiles and bonus cards, which contain only slight variations from each other. I enjoy this game a lot and would love to see more variety in the card effects, bonuses, and goals. On the upside, the publisher is already working on an expansion slated to come out later this year. Hopefully, this will add more varied abilities and scoring opportunities to make the game more interesting. So to sum it up, Wingspan is a quick and fun mid-weight action selection engine-building game with stellar components. It's well-earned its Kennerspiel Award, and I am most definitely looking forward to the expansion. Anyone interested in Euro should definitely check this game out. So that's it for now. Thanks for listening.
Hello, this is Luke of Gaming Library. And in this segment, I'll be talking about Jaws the Board Game by Ravensburger, designed by the group Prospero Hall. So to start, what is Jaws the Board Game? It is a board game that is played in two acts. The first act is a Letters of Whitechapel-esque one versus all hidden movement game, wherein the shark player tries to go around the board eating swimmers, while the human players try to deduce where the shark is and target him with barrels of chum, while also trying to save as much swimmers as they can. The second act is still a one versus all between the shark and the humans, but this time it takes place in the orca, a boat, and the goal of the shark player is to kill all the humans or completely destroy the boat, while the human player's goal is to kill the shark. So first, let's talk about the theme and how it incorporates the source material. What I find amazing about Jaws the board game is that the mechanics and gameplay go very well with the source material. How else would you make a game about humans trying to defeat a shark than by making a one versus all hidden movement game? You definitely feel the tension as the humans trying to deduce where the shark might be based on what is happening on the board. And as the shark player, you feel both powerful because you are hidden and overwhelmed because you are trying to compete against three other players. The game exceptionally translates the movie into a board game, from the art style to the graphic design and to the fact that the game is in two parts. And how well you do in Act 1 affects your starting advantages in Act 2. The game is very well designed just from that alone. But even without thinking about how well the game is designed from the source material, the game itself is really, really well designed. The shark player, other than the hidden movement, also has some special actions that they can play during their turn, which they place face down in front of them to indicate to the human players that they played an ability, though they do not know which ability they used. I also like how the human players are also asymmetrical in gameplay. One human player has a slower boat, but he is the only one who can throw barrels that can catch the shark. One has a faster boat, but can scan the waters to determine if the shark is nearby. While another human player can only move on the island, but can close beaches so that no swimmers are added onto that beach. The game is really at its best with four players, with each player playing their role to the fullest, and a player only focusing on what their role in the game is. Unlike in a two or three player game, wherein a player will have to control two or more characters, which may be okay, but it is not as fun as having a complete four-player game with each player playing only one role. Another thing I like in the game is that even though how well you do in the first act determines on what abilities you have in the second act, the game is balanced enough that even though you do well in the first act, there is still a fair fighting chance for you to lose in the second act if your opponent makes better decisions and dice rolls than you. The game is also very easy to learn. You only do four actions on your turn in the first act, while in the second act, it is mainly a social guessing game where the human players try to deduce where the shark player will appear. The second act also contains dice rolling in the combat, but I think it just adds more tension and fun in the game rather than making the combat too easy or straightforward, or too random. Overall, I think Jaws the Board Game shows us how to take a source material and then turn it into a really great board game. It is easy to learn, fast to play, fun to experience, and has tons and tons of replayability, which I think is what makes a great board game. It retails in America at $25 to $30, which is around 1,250 to 1,500 pesos. Follow the Gaming Library FB and IG page for any updates regarding upcoming games. So this is my preview of Jaws the Board Game. Again, this is Luke from Gaming Library, and this is goodbye for now.
Welcome back to G Live. We just heard from our contributors, and now let's go into a quick but in-depth discussion of KeyForge. The game has been with us for a little bit under a year now, and more people are actually joining the fray and learning about it. Glory here, for instance, learned the game about a month ago.
A month ago, yes.
And has opened up a handful of packs herself.
Four packs, yeah.
That's I'm not sure if that's accurate. Some people might not admit. But yeah, then again, I myself have been playing the game since its release, even before. And I have opened maybe an exponential amount as compared to my partner here. So real quick, we're going to be talking about our thoughts and insights on KeyForge as a game, coming from the perspective of a newbie and a veteran. Mm-hmm. Right. So first, Glory, let's talk about the game's complexity and depth.
Okay.
Before having learned about KeyForge, what were your impressions of its complexity and depth? Just looking at it like from a single box.
Yep. So just looking at it, learning that it's a bit like Magic the Gathering.
From the same maker.
Yep. From the same designer. It felt like it was so hard to get into, especially because every deck is not the same. Every deck is unique. And there's already a cult following. So it felt like I couldn't get into it. And parang may yung sistema niya, it might not be for me.
Right.
Yeah.
So that was a little intimidating.
Yep.
I can see how
especially since I haven't played card games.
In a while.
Yep.
Right? I think we were talking about this off the air. You said the last card game you played was like Pokemon.
Yep, yep.
And there's no...
And I was a kid back then.
Yeah, and there's no point of comparison. None at all. Yep. So I guess... on my end, I totally agree how you could say that, right? That looking at a card game like this, the unique aspect of it in itself might be what scares you away. Mm-hmm. Parang, how am I supposed to understand this game or even enjoy it if everything is so unique? Everything is just so out there. And it's from the maker of Magic, you say?
Yeah.
Isn't that game super complicated? And of course, Richard Garfield is known to design also like super IQ 300 games such as Android Netrunner. Like that game is like ridiculous. Mm-hmm. That's an asymmetrical card game. So how could I even get into this new one, KeyForge? So on my end, having played it for a while now and even having played all these other card games ever since, I was looking forward to it being a happy medium. Mm-hmm. I did not have any expectations, but I had hopes, diba? And I think now that we're having this conversation right here, we're able to see that it's not what you thought it was, and it's something that I think is just the right kind of difficulty.
And I think what adds to that is the fact that you don't build your own deck.
Yeah.
Because with Magic, for example, if you're playing with seasoned players, it's so hard for you to get into that, especially if they're not playing with a starter deck,
yeah,
right? If they build their own deck, they play with it, it's so hard for you to get up to the same level.
Yeah.
But here, since every deck, you don't build your own deck and you play with a deck fresh out of the pack, then it's easier to level up.
Yeah, yep. The sense of accomplishment is there already.
Yep.
Right? After maybe two or three games, you're like, oh, so this is how my deck works.
Yeah.
And I think that brings our discussion so perfectly into game length, right? Just as important as it is to know how long the game plays when you sit down, finish a game, forge my three keys, how long does that take? I think it's important to know as well, gaano katagal until you go like, I get the game, right? So for you, as a newbie, going into KeyForge a month in, how has that been?
It varies for me. When it's a learning game, where both of us are trying to learn it, well, I played with one of my friends the other week. It took us, around 30 to 45 minutes. Mm-hmm. But since kanina, you you murdered me.
That's very, putting it very, very violently. I would prefer the word systemically educated.
It took us, what, 20 minutes?
Right?
20 minutes, yeah. But that's because we both know how to play. Well, there are some clarifications along the way since I am a newbie, but I mean, 20 minutes? Mm-hmm. 20, 30 minutes? Yeah.
And no, not even just because you're a newbie. Again, the unique aspect of the game leaves even players like me in a tournament that I run to ask questions. I'm like, guys, tama ba to? Is this how this works? Let me check out Google. Oh, okay, so that's how it works.
Yep.
So game length is something that we can look forward to on the bright side, that it's much, much shorter than a lot of these other games that we play. Like, I think last year, 2018, was the year of the duel, right?
Mm-hmm.
A lot of these board games come out with dueling flavors.
Yep.
And those games play in under an hour.
Yep.
Safe to say, right?
What are good examples? Maybe
Seven Wonders Duel.
Yep, Seven Wonders Duel. I think this game plays shorter than that.
Of course. Yep. Yeah. There's Duelosaur Island. Mm-hmm. So
recently there's Hanami Koji. Hanami Koji plays in about the same length.
There you go. Yep. So again, if you're looking for a nice game, a meaty game that plays rather quickly.
How long does a game of Magic run?
Magic runs about the same, 20, 30 minutes.
Oh, okay.
So
not
that's
that long.
Safe. That's safe to say, yeah. Magic is, to me, like just a little bit of a tangent, is a master system.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you learn Magic and you jump into other game systems, there's a lot of comparisons to be made.
Okay.
So it's easy to learn. But then again, that's neither here nor there. KeyForge is what we're talking about. When we're talking in the grander scheme of things, the length of time it takes to say, ah, gets ko na.
Mm-hmm.
I get it. How are you feeling that so far? A month in, do you understand the game or you're still in that learning phase?
I think I'm still in that learning phase. But it's more because I have yet to play with my decks a lot more. Mm-hmm. I have to master them. Mm-hmm. You need to know, okay, this is how I can combo this card, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. But in terms of the game system in itself, first game in, I got it.
Right, right. Yeah. You understand that, oh, I don't always have to fight.
Yep.
Oh, it's about the amber. It's about the keys.
Yep.
Oh, my cards, they move around this way.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm really proud to say that my game, this game, our game right now, KeyForge, is an easy to pick up game in a short span of time.
Yep, there are some little rules like taunt, mm-hmm. Hazardous.
Stunning.
Yep.
Yep.
But that's so easy to look up online. Yeah. And even the rule book, you just have one paragraph to explain it and you get it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just basically how I like to explain like games that people think are complex or mm-hmm. that are hard. It's basically simple rules layered out.
Yep.
It's just layers.
I'm actually quite confident bringing my KeyForge decks out without the rule book because...
Nice.
Yeah.
Right.
It's so easy to get into.
It's a little intuitive.
Yeah.
Next up, last point in this little discussion is the game's mechanics. As we said, KeyForge is a game that's pretty quick and easy to learn. And it's easy to teach even after you just learned it yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You taught it to a friend after I taught it to you. You kind of got it. You played in under an hour. How are you liking KeyForge's mechanics so far?
I think it's really, like what you said earlier, it's not really about attacking people. It's about major euro.
Mm-hmm.
Diba? It's converting, thinking of cool combos. Medyo, pwede nga siyang medyo engine building pa eh.
Yeah, yeah, actually.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, build up your hand, like what I saw you doing earlier.
Mm-hmm.
You were building your hand, just okay, mini turns, then boom, right?
Yeah.
And the cards that you already have on your battle line will actually interact with whatever you played. So it's medyo engine building siya for me, and maybe that's why I really like it because I love engine building games.
Right?
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. A good friend here, Willow, does not though. He likes the combat, and I'm taking all I can to go like, dude. There's something to this. So that's a conversation for another day. Pero tama ka. You're right. There's so much in the game that could, you know, be appealing to a certain number of crowds. And again, it's right to think that maybe this game is not just card combat. Maybe it's not just Euro. Maybe it's also an engine building game.
Mm-hmm.
And with that being said, a deck has three houses, 12 cards from each. And they have their own different mechanics that go towards this grander scheme of forging keys. Do you have a favorite house?
So far, I really like Shadows.
Right.
Because I like the, when you're already at 6 coins and I Shadows just comes in and steal.
Mm-hmm. No way. Not on my watch. You're not 4, Jean.
I think also Untamed is quite powerful. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And Brobnar.
Okay, so there's your top 3?
Yeah, I guess.
Okay. So far, that seems right. In the first month of the game, people were all over Untamed. Mm-hmm. Shadows. People were all over Shadows. Untamed always was that weird house that just did all sorts of odd things, right? They're like, okay, so I can destroy things, I can gain a lot of money, and my dudes fight. Really, what do you want? Mm-hmm. Right? But at this point in the game and in its lifespan and in my career of playing it, I'm a big fan of this.
Oh.
This is crazy. This just does all sorts of things that it has no business doing. And I guess, yeah, it comes down to like knowing how to use your cards, you know, to manipulate your hand, to make the most of it. And maybe a close second would be Logos.
Really?
Yeah. Logos likes to do that. Logos likes to play with its hand.
Yep.
Logos likes
to archive this. Yep.
And, you know, go from there.
Mm-hmm.
So.
See, this naman ang naalala ko kay this yung Omni. Destroy all creatures.
Yeah. So you know, this likes to do that too. So these are the two houses that do things that they have no business doing.
Yep.
Right? And they're like, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So, yep, that's our little discussion on Keyforge. Impressions from both the perspective of a newbie and a veteran. If you guys want to add anything to this or you have any questions about the game here forth, do let us know. We'll be posting this up on the website, www.gaminglive.com. Comments are going to be open. Hit us up with that. But from here, we're going to be throwing it over to our contributors once more.
Hi, this is Jovan, and I'm going to do a short review of Cabo. This is a new card game. Well, relatively new because it's an old game by Melissa Limes. It was first published in 2011, and it was re-released by Bezier Games. And I recently bought my copy at Gaming Library as soon as it came out. And I'm really having fun with it. The goal of the game is to be the lowest scoring player at the end of the game. And it ends automatically when a player goes over 100 points. So the players initially only know 2 out of 4 of their cards. Through card drawing and certain action cards, player may replace their cards with ones with better values. At the end of the round, players need to get the lowest sum of numbers to get nearest to Cabo, who is actually a unicorn printed on card 0. Player interaction is very high, and the unknown factor plays a part in this as well. It's very exciting when you try to guess or try to check if other players are bluffing you or what with the kind of cards that they have. It's good for beginners and casual gamers as well, and I think it will also sit well with younger players. But having good memory is key, I think. So I guess the younger people will have an advantage with this game. It can actually be played with regular playing cards, but you'll be missing out on the really pretty art and the printed text on specific action cards, because of course you're going to have to assign certain card numbers with swap, spy, and peek. But for me, I don't want to deal with that, so I prefer to play with the actual Cabo game. And, you know, as I've said, the art is really, really pretty. So if you feel like, you know, experiencing this game, it's actually pretty affordable. Less than $600, I believe, in Gaming Library.
Hi, guys. Glory here with Sam.
Hello.
So we just want to give our quick take on Cabo as well.
I think Cabo is a very fun game that you can play in like a couple of minutes, because you don't have to wait until you reach 100 to finish the game. You can just stop after 1-2 rounds. So it's a good game to play during like a lunch break in your office, something like that. And it's also easy to teach.
Ako naman, I've tried playing Cabo during a beach trip, and it's actually a good travel game in my opinion. So yeah, and it's something that you can just teach to casual gamers or new gamers, and they'll easily get it. Although I think you need to do one playthrough for everyone to get it, and then after that, should be fine.
It's a small game. It's just a bunch of cards, and it's easy to bring with you when you travel.
Thank you for listening. Bye.
Hi, this is Ben from Ben Dares All at YouTube and Instagram, here at Ben Dares Games for GLive, Gaming Library Live for you guys. Right, so anyway, we don't have like less than 5 minutes to talk about. Okay, this is the Exit the Game, The Sunken Treasure. That's like difficulty level of 2. Okay, so it's from Thames and Cosmos, where anything goes at Thames and Cosmos. Or if you want games, you go for Cosmos and Game and Thames. Yeah, just kidding. That's, yeah, I don't know if that's good or tightly. Anyway, okay, so we gotta hurry on this. So, all right, so one of the rules for like Exit the Game is you've got to get over yourself. You know that this is like a one-time game. You are going to destroy it. So get it out of your system. You're going to mutilate this thing, and you probably won't be able to play it again unless you're really fond of tape and pasting and whatever, okay? Arts and crafts, you know? Right. So once you're good with that, again, Exit the Game is played out like a escape room in a box, actually. But this time, you get to bring scissors with you. In fact, you should. And pen and paper. Because I know in escape rooms, like, you know, oh, no cell phones. Oh, you can't bring flashlights. Oh, you can't use, like, paper. Everything has to be menthol. No, but here with the Exit the Game, you need these items for you because you're going to get ready to rip up the poor game. So the Sunken Treasure is described as linear by a friend. So you go through the puzzle step by step. There would be around, like, ooh, I can't remember anymore. I think there was, like, 7. And besides, I can't tell you because it would be a spoiler. But I'll be vague about the stuff that happens. So, you know, you get a bit of the experience when you play it because it's fun. Because, like, when we played it, there was, like, 5 of us. But no, the owner of the game, he left, like, after, like, the second puzzle because he had work to do. And the 4 of us had to struggle by ourselves with the guy who had experience with the game, leaving us stranded under the water, drowning while trying to find a sunken treasure. Just kidding. Okay. So, all right. So when you open the game, actually, you find like a decoder disc. And if you know what a decoder disc is, it's like a decoder ring. And if you know what a decoder ring is, you're showing your age. Right. So the first puzzle would be like a visual puzzle. Very easy. You know, like it set the tone. Well, actually, it didn't set the tone because we were struggling afterwards. Cause second puzzle, you needed your pencil now, which we got some trouble in. Took a while to figure out. Wow. Now, the third puzzle was when we had a problem. We actually had to check the hint book for this. Because this is when we were, like, mutilating the box already, and we were getting weird about it. So, like I said, get over yourself. Get it done. There. But it was very clever. It was very clever because... Oh, can I say this? Because you've got to construct... No, I can't give a spoiler for that. Right, so... Yeah, the fourth puzzle involved, yeah, using scissors, cutting up. And this is when it was got funny, because we were struggling. The 3 of us were struggling. And there was one guy, Tony. Hi, Tony. He was like, he was quite sleepy and he wasn't like paying attention, but he was the guy out of, you know, he was out of the loop. So when he came, when he looked and glanced at what we were struggling at, he had fresh eyes. He immediately saw what the thing to do was. And I'd like, you know, like, I was kicking myself for not figuring it out. But he figured it out, he got it, and we got through. Okay, so the fifth puzzle after that was a very clever illusion that involved the boss. I think I mistook this for the, maybe this was the sixth puzzle. Either way, I was really frustrated at the fifth or sixth puzzle because it had, like, a drawing aspect. And my gosh, like, there was, like, one thing that looked either like this or that. I'm going to use some rhyming slang. If you know, if you watched your, what's that movie? Mary Poppins, you're going to get what this is. The T and H look like a Lillian Gish. Dang, and that messed me up a lot. Okay, so seventh puzzle, we actually had treasure by then. And like, you know, what? We still can't escape? We have the treasure, let's just go! And we were wrapped up, it was like exhausting, we finished it in like, what, 80 minutes? It was like no, but that's okay because that's just the first time I did it with friends, and you know what, we were left behind by the experienced guy. So had such a good time, and you should try these other games because again, for like an Exit the Game costs around what, like 800, 750, 850, and that's like you can play that with like 6 people, 5 people, whatever. While a regular escape room is like 300 to 450. Both are like, you know, one-time plays only. Once you played, you can't play again because you know all the tricks and stuff. But this one, you know, like, You can play with multiple people. You can have fun. You can step on each other's toes, but that's normal and that's fine. Okay, so again, that would be Exit the Game from Thames and Cosmos, Where Anything Goes. The Sunken Treasure, that difficulty level of 2, but very good for you. So play this game. Or more. Yeah, actually, I'd like to try more. It's just like finding someone else to play with me, like as a group. Because, gosh, if I'm by myself, I'm going to totally get stranded and stuff. Right. Bye, guys.
So before we end this episode, we just want to start this new segment called GL Recommends. So this segment will basically be recommending another game if you like a particular game. It's something like, if you like this, you might also like this. Mm-hmm. So for this episode, what does GL recommend if you like? Dun, 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 dun. Splendor.
Well, Splendor is the entry point for a lot of board game fans right now.
Yep.
It's been about, 4 years since the game first came out in 2015?
Yep.
And I guess GL recommends, if you like Splendor, to go ahead and play Century Spice Road, because it's better.
No, it is not better.
It's better.
No, it's not better. This does not reflect the opinion of everyone from GL. Okay, this is just Leo talking.
I guess this sounds like it's going to be a conversation and an argument we're going to have for another day.
Yep. I think we'll just stop right now before we might not end this episode.
Mm-mm.
So that's going to wrap up episode 3 of G Live. Please check back in 2 weeks for our roundtable discussion. This month, we'll talk about Gen Con 2019, as well as past Gen Con experiences of other GL curators. Did you know that some of the GL curators have actually gone to Gen Con?
Just recently again. I was all like, so it's Hans who's gone, and then...
Have you?
No. Almost. I almost went on this whole trip to Gen Con for work, and then, things fell out. But then again, we're not writing it off.
Okay, maybe next year.
Maybe next year. That being said, thank you guys so much for listening to G Live. If you would do so kindly, please share this podcast if you enjoyed. And of course, click follow on Spotify and however else you might be listening to this. Send us an email if you would like. That's via gaminglibrary.content@gmail.com. And of course, put a comment in this post on our website, www.gaminglibe.com. And of course, like us on Facebook. Search for Gaming Library. With that being said, hopefully you had a fun time. And whether you're having a good night, good morning, a good afternoon, or a good evening, hopefully you keep on gaming. For G Live, this is Leo.
This is Glory.
Peace out.